So today we'll be talking about the nature of desire. You can read in your books later on, but what I have going to speak today is not only what's in the book, but also some other ideas that I got from this called the Manual of Self-Unfoldment. It's a beautiful text which gives a very good introduction to Vedanta. Those who want to study this, it's a very good how to unfold oneself. So this is available. I do have some copies if somebody would like. So let us talk about the nature of desire. Why do we have desire? Why do I want something? So desire, how does it arise? It arises from an attitude of incompleteness, that I am incomplete. Something in me is not okay, is not right. And how do I make it right? By desiring something. So it could be a desire for an object, desire for a person, desire for a situation, you know, this situation, or desire for a job, or desire for power. And we think that if this thing changes, I'll be fine. So from incompleteness, I'm looking for completeness, looking for perfection. And as I said, we go about it by changing. Okay, if I change my job, I'll be fine. Or if I change my appearance, you know, get some plastic surgery, I'll be fine. Or if I change my job, or change my city, you know, change my country, change my spouse. So we are thinking that by getting another person or another spouse or another job or another city, we will get completeness. And what we find is that for a while things are okay when I have a new job or a new position or a new city, but then that each job comes with its own problems, each spouse comes with her or his own problems, each city has its own problems. So problems are there everywhere, and all we have done is we have exchanged one set of problems for another set of problems. So desire A, a state of unsettlement, that I am not happy until this or that happens. So it leads to more unhappiness because I am looking to change the outer environment and trying to find happiness. That is number one, that it makes me unsettled. The second problem with desire is that if you look at that circle, where does desire arise? Desire arises from vasanas, from tendencies, because I have this tendency, I have this vasana for a certain object or a certain thing. And how did the vasanas arise? How did these vasanas arise? How did my... They are deep-seated tendencies that we carry from one life to another. And vasanas arise from, generally, from selfish actions. Actions done selfishly create vasanas or tendencies. And it can be a simple thing as coffee. You know, I have my first cup of coffee one day. I've never had coffee before. I like it. And so next day I have a second cup and then a third cup. And in a month, I'm so addicted to coffee that I can't start my morning, you know, without my morning cup of. Now, were we born with a cup of coffee in our hand? No, it is something we cultivated, whether it's coffee, whether it's cigarette, whether it's alcohol. And it can be even something that is simple, but something like money, you know, I have to have this, or power or position. So what does vasana do? Vasana creates the desire that I must have because of my tendency. It could be alcohol, could be anything. And then once this desire arises, oh, I must have ice cream. Then what happens? I then creates a thought. Okay, I need to go out and get what I am desiring. And the thought leads to action. And I go out and try to fulfill my desire. Now, suppose the desire gets fulfilled, then I get greed. Then I need more to make myself happier. Because I have already got it, but if I got one, it will make me happy. If I have got 10, I'll make 10 times happy. But that's not always the case. One ice cream, you know, if I get, makes me happy. But if I get 10 ice creams, will I be 10 times happy? No, I'll be unhappy. So if happiness was in the in the object, then more of it would make me more happy, but that's not the case. Secondly, if happiness was in the object, then it should make everybody equally happy, right? Ice cream makes me happy, should make her happy, her. But it's not the case. Not everybody likes ice cream, or the example is cigarette. Now there are, you're walking along and there is a person standing on the sidewalk smoking. And he blows the smoke and he has so much joy. But the person walking by says, you know, this smoke is bothering me. That's why they ban cigarette smoking in restaurants and public places, because what is joy for one is suffering for the other. So happiness is not in objects. So we'll talk about that a little more later. So action leads to greed if it is fulfilled. And if it is not fulfilled, then anger. I didn't get it. So whoever is the obstacle between me and getting the object becomes my focus of my anger, that this person is preventing me from getting it. So if I get it, greed. If I don't get, anger. So then what do? Then I do more action, because by greed it made me happier. So more will make me even more happier, make me get more and more happiness. And same thing, anger, because I couldn't get it, so I put more action. Next time I'm going to get it. And what that does, it strengthens your desire. The more I get, the more I desire. And then as the desire becomes stronger, it strengthens your vasanas. So that's why one arrow is coming from vasana to desire, other one from desire to vasana. So it is a vicious circle we are caught in. Desire, thought, action, greed and anger, more action, more desire, and more vasanas. Yes.
Yeah. This question, sure. But it's okay. So in this concept of desire,
right,
is sexual attraction included in that?
Yes, definitely. That's why, you know, when a person is sexually very attracted and they don't get what they want, then they get angry, you know. Or even if they get it, then they want more. And if when that one partner doesn't satisfy, then they look for multiple partners and it becomes an overwhelming desire, almost to the point of addiction. Yes, sex is equally in it as much as anything else.
Okay, well, this is this area is
right.
A problem for me. I've never been able to square the divine and sex. My perception at this point is, being a real believer in evolution, you know, is that I and all living things on this planet are slaves to life. I mean, this strange
right.
thing, you know, organism that's on this planet, and I'm held captive because the only thing life wants is to continue to live.
Right, right.
And so, in order to make sure that it's going to continue to live,
right,
life, for at least for humans, makes the reproductive process
right.
the most pleasurable physical experience anybody can experience. And then it makes the loss of life or ending life, death, out to be the most horrible
right.
thing in the whole world.
Right.
Right. I feel like at age 20 or so, males are, life just takes over and says, you have to procreate.
Right.
You
right.
have to continue right. me. And women too, in this, in a different way. But
yes.
Same way. You know, and then it just holds you there for 20 or 30 years.
Right.
I mean, and
yeah,
that's what they
right.
could have. I don't get how you're supposed to.
So I think I like to answer your question if I can
sure.
finish the talk, either at the end of the talk or maybe
yeah,
even you and I can,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, talk separate. Would that be okay? Either we, at the end, or even if we don't have time, if the time is up, then maybe we can talk later after the class. So So this is the circle of desire. And what is the ratio of happiness, which I got from this particular text? It's called the happiness equation, is desires fulfilled upon desires entertained. That is the happiness equation. So if I have, say, if I have 10 desires and I fulfill all 10, then I'm happy, right? I have wanted 10 things. And so I had 10 desires, and out of them, all 10 got fulfilled. I'm very happy. But suppose out of 10 desires, only 8 get fulfilled and 2 don't. Now, 8 fulfilled is very good, right? But what do? We focus on the 2 that are not fulfilled. Why didn't I get it? Or other problem is, suppose the desires entertained become too many. Like instead of 10, I have 100 desires. I have 100 desires and only 8 got fulfilled. Oh, that's so sad. That's so sad, right? Because I have increased the desires entertained, and the desires fulfilled cannot keep up with it. So our rishis tell us that first of all, desires fulfilled can never be complete, can never make you complete, as we said. In fact, our Swami Tejomayananda ji, who was the worldwide head of the mission, equates it to a Kleenex, box of Kleenex. The moment I pull one out, what happens? Another one comes. I pull one out, another one is ready. So similarly, the desires, the more you fulfill, there are more desires to be fulfilled. You fulfill one, another one is ready. You fulfill one, another one. So it's an unending cycle. A, you can never fulfill all your desires because more and more arise. And then you have desires entertained, which are 100. So what they say is reduce it from 100 to 10. Like we said, I had 100 desires, but out of which I reduced it to 10. Now out of 100, if 8 are only fulfilled, that's very, really bad. But suppose I have only 10 desires and out of them 8 or 9 get fulfilled, I'll say at least it's better. So what they say is reduce your desires entertained. Make your life simple. Make your life where I don't need that many things to make me happy. Because in this modern society, the advertising says, you have to have this, you have to have that. And the TV and the media and the internet, and everybody keeps throwing these desires at you. Without this, if you don't have the latest iPhone, you are useless. You don't have the latest car, you don't have the latest house, you don't have the latest wife, you don't have the latest plastic surgeon. You know, so anything and everything. So what they say is reduce your desires entertained, then that ratio will be in your favor. If you have less desires, then you will have less desires to fulfill. So develop a calmness of mind where I don't need so many things to make me happy. If you say that there is this thing I have to have, without that my life is incomplete, then what's going to happen? Then you're going to make yourself dependent on that object or that person. So think in your mind, is there anything that I have to have? And if I don't have it, my life will be no good, incomplete. And we all have something or the other which I have to have without. So that is right away, it makes you a slave. Either it could be an object, it could be a person, it could be a situation. So one has to develop the peace of mind. And peace cannot be there as long as the desires are there. Because desires are temporary. See, whatever I get in my, whatever is fulfilled is temporary. I get a house, after a while the house, you know, becomes old, needs work. I get a new car, same thing, it makes me happy for a while, then it needs more work. Temporary things cannot give us permanent peace. And so, job, you know, it was very good for a while, and then my boss changed, and now I have problems. So temporary things cannot give us permanent peace, because permanent peace is our nature. We all are of the nature of Om, or the nature of fulfillment. That is our nature, but we think that it is in objects. So to give us example, we talk about BMW. You know what BMW stands for, right? She knows.
Big money wasted.
Big money wasted, right? So what happens is that I need a BMW. So I say, BMW, BMW, BMW. I need to have a BMW. And so somehow I raise the money, get a loan, borrow from my friends, and raise enough money so I can go buy it. So for a while, I have great happiness because I'm driving through the neighborhood. Whoom! Everybody's watching my new BMW convertible, and everybody's jealous. How long does that last? Till my neighbor next door gets a Maserati or a Ferrari, which is red, and it makes even more horsepower, more, and then my happiness becomes less. But now I'm watching him every as he drives through the neighborhood. So happiness, and why did that BMW give me happiness? Because in my mind, I am happiness, I am peace, but it gets disturbed by that not having that object, not having that BMW, not having that house. So the moment I get it, my disturbance quiets down for a while. My mind becomes quiet. I'm no longer demanding, wanting. So for a while, it is peaceful until the next desire comes and it disturbs. So the happiness was not in the BMW. Happiness is not in the cigarette. Happiness is not in the house. Happiness is within, but that happiness temporarily got disturbed by the desire. So when the desire got fulfilled, my mind becomes quiet. For a moment, the mind becomes quiet. And when the mind becomes quiet, then I experience the inner peace, the inner joy. And so I think that the happiness came from the object. But the happiness was already within me. The desire was there, that agitation. For a while, it gets quieted down. That's why smoking. For a while, I get very peaceful. And then 2 hours later, the desire rises again. Alcohol is the same thing. Every evening I drink. For a while, I'm peaceful. And then next morning, next evening, the desire. So our nature is happiness, but we think the happiness comes in objects. So how do we reduce the desires? So there is this contentment story. I think, Diana, you might have heard it. I have told it before about that man who was fishing. But anyway, it's a very interesting story. So there was this American delegation that were all experts in fisheries. And so they went to India. The Indian government invited them that you come and teach us how to improve our fisheries, you know, how to improve the yield and all that. And so they went around and checked in the different parts and gave advice and made suggestions. And, you know, so and they were issuing lengthy reports. And so happened towards the end of the trip, they were in one village right at the seashore, and they saw this man. It was about 12 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and he had this little catch of fish which he had caught, and it was in this little ice kind of container, and he was sitting there peacefully enjoying the sun and kind of lying down and, you know, half asleep, half dozing. And so they go and tell him, they say, look at this guy. It's 1 o'clock and he's already done with his day's work, and he always has this little box of fish, and he's, that's not the way. So they go and, you know, kind of wake him up. Sir, you know, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm relaxing. Sir, are you done? He said, yep, I'm done. I've caught this fish. I'm going to go to the market, sell it. I'll get enough food and I'll eat. So they said, but that's not enough. You know, I mean, you've just only, it's only 1 o'clock. You only worked 4 hours. Shouldn't you be working all day? He said, well, yeah, if I work all day, then what will happen? He said, if you work all day, you know, you'll catch more fish. He says, okay, then what? He says, then once you catch more fish and sell more fish, then you'll get more money. He says, okay, then what? Then you can buy a boat. You don't have a boat now, no. What do? He says, I just go out and put my net and I can, you know, whatever fish I catch close to the shore. You can buy a boat. Okay, then what? Then you can buy a boat and go further and catch a lot more fish. Okay, then what? Well, then you catch more fish, you come and sell them, then you'll make a lot more money. He says, okay, then what? So then you can buy more boats. You know, you have one boat, you can buy 5 boats, 10 boats. Then you'll have a whole fleet of boats. So, okay, then what? He said, then you can hire people to fish for you and you can become a owner of a company. He said, then what? He said, then you can relax and do nothing. Relax and do nothing. He said, that's what I'm doing right now. Why should I go through all these years? So the point is not that one shouldn't work or one shouldn't be successful, but work should come out of a desire to serve. Work should not come out of a desire to get more and then out of incompleteness. Because the moment that happens, then it becomes a vicious cycle. So that's what we understand, that happiness only can be found within. The moment you put your happiness in something, that's what our Pujya Gurudev used to say, do not put the key of your happiness in somebody else's pocket. So anytime they want, they can turn you and make you happy, then make you unhappy, or the remote control. Do not give the remote control of your happiness to somebody else, whereby by flipping a switch, they can make you happy, make you unhappy. So happiness should be within. And that's what the masters, if you see all the great masters, they had discovered that. They had discovered this principle that you have to change. What we do is we try to change the world, try to change the situations. And you can never do that. You can never change a person. You can never change the situation permanently. You know, temporarily you might. Ultimately, it leads to dissatisfaction. So when you change yourself and realize that happiness is within, peace is within, then whether the world is conducive or not doesn't matter. So it does not mean that one shouldn't work or try to be successful, but it should come out of a desire to serve, not with a desire to get. So that's what one has to practice, is positive values. That means when there is unselfish, where there is selfishness, bring in unselfishness. Where there is jealousy, bring in love, you know, like the prayer of Saint Francis. Where there is anger, let me bring love, you know, hatred, let me bring compassion. So developing these positive values. So when I change myself, two things happen. First of all, I become calm. No matter how the situations around me are, I am not disturbed because I am no longer looking for happiness outside. Happiness I have found within. The example I give is like, you know, in certain parts of India, water is in short supply. So the city only sends you water 2 hours a day or 4 hours a day, and you have to fill up the buckets, fill up the pots, because the water will only come for this much time. Take your shower in that time and then keep the water for cooking, for washing and all. So you're dependent on the city to send you water. But say if you happen to live in a farm and you dig inside and you find a well in your farm where now you can tap it for water whenever you need it, then you don't need to depend on the city. If the city sends me water for 2 hours, very good. I use it. If the city doesn't send, I have a well within my property where I can tap anytime, turn it on. So similarly, once we discover the happiness within, then if the world gives me happiness, good, nothing wrong with it. If the world doesn't give me happiness, I have found the happiness within. So I no longer become a beggar. I don't go around with a begging bowl asking people to give me a little happiness here, give me a little happiness. Because I have found the reservoir of happiness within. So we are not saying that you need to cut off from the world and don't get and become miserable or unhappy. No, I am happy. If the world is good, great. If the world is not conducive, I am still fine. So that attitude can only come when we change ourselves. That's what they say. Change yourself and the world will change. So two benefits. One is I don't depend on the world for my happiness. Secondly, when I change, then people around me say, what's happened to her? Why is she so much calmer? Why is she so much peaceful? So then they get influenced by my positive attitude, by my peaceful attitude. When somebody comes at me with anger, in the past I used to react with anger, now I react with peace, then I become a positive influence for change in society. That's what in this article the master tells us, that if there are 100 such people in a city, they can change the whole city because they can become focus of change. So that is the benefit of doing that. Change yourself and the world will change with you. So that's what the essence is, desires fulfilled upon desires entertained. Make your life simple, find happiness within, and that's what we do in meditation. Because in meditation, when your mind gets stilled and you go within and you discover your inner self, then waves of happiness come from within. And once you have discovered that joy within, then you can tap it anytime. You can close your eyes and just go within. You don't even have to close your eyes. Just turn your attention inward and you can discover that. So regular meditation takes you to that inner source. So that is why meditation is beneficial. So that's the essence of this talk today. Any questions or comments?
That's one I'm trying to work on, but
this
just makes sense. It's changed my life.
True. Really has, so. No, sugar is an addiction. Sugar is like heroin.
It is.
But I think the way to quit it is 100% cold turkey. You cannot cut down. See, that's another thing. If there is something that is very powerful, you have to do it 100%. You do it 90%, the 10% will come and bite you. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm not to brag, but my hemoglobin A1C was slightly high. And so I actually 3 months ago, or maybe 2 months ago, just quit completely. I have zero sugar. I don't even touch it. The best desserts are in front of me. The only thing I have, a bowl of fruit in the morning, and that's it. Throughout the day, no sugar. After dessert, after dinner, no dessert. I pick up either nuts or something like that, you know. But yeah, because sugar is very addictive. Right after dinner, you're looking for, you know, something to complete the meal.
Right.
Because it's incomplete.
Right. I'm not happy until I get it.
But really, no, if you really want to do it, it has... Same thing I did with tea and coffee, because I was addicted to caffeine, in the sense 6-7 times a day I had to have caffeine. Tea in the morning, and then at 10 o'clock of the first Pepsi, and then at 12 o'clock Pepsi with lunch, and then Pepsi at 2 o'clock because I was sleepy, then come home, have a cup of tea, and then 5-6 times a day. If we would go out, I would, and Swami Ishwaranandaji told me, he says, I asked him, my mind is racing too much in meditation. He says it's because of all this caffeine. And so it happened, I went to Piercy, the Northern California, you've been there, the retreat place. And I, for 1 week, I didn't have tea or coffee or Pepsi. Pepsi was not available, tea and coffee was. But for 1 week, I didn't. And I realized I can live without it. So you have to quit cold turkey. You can't just cut it down, I find. That's my personal experience. I don't know. Right. Yes.
A question that I have while I was reading the chapter number 4,
right,
Desire, is to what extent desire correlate with need? Because we have some human needs,
right,
which are human needs, we bring them naturally, like the need for food.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have it.
Right.
So in this light, desire is... It seems to be something lighter, something that I can avoid,
right,
which is fine. But there are some desires that go together with the needs, like John was saying, the sexual need. For
right,
reason,
right, right.
It's something that I take with me. It comes with me.
Right.
It's not
right.
My capricious mind that I just want to have it.
Right.
So it's very difficult to work.
Yes.
When you believe that those are kind of needs, human needs.
Right. Mahatma Gandhi said that there is enough in the world to satisfy everybody's needs, but there is not enough in the world to satisfy one man's want. See, there is difference between needs and wants. Needs is what I need to live, but want is what desire, what I want. So there is enough to satisfy everybody's needs, but there is not enough to satisfy one person's wants, one person's desire. So one has to distinguish between need and want. I need this or do I want it? And so when any, like when you go shopping, you know, to the mall and then you're buying another dress or another golf clubs or another shirt or another tie, do I need it or do I want it? So needs, yes, we should fulfill. But as you, what I have found that as you become more and more on the spiritual path, automatically your desires reduce. Automatically, you don't feel like you have to. I shouldn't keep talking about myself, but I haven't bought a shirt in years. I get a lot of new shirts, but people get them Christmas, birthday, Father's Day. So my kids give them to me, my employees, my family. So I get a lot of clothes, but I never go to the mall. I don't feel the need because I have more than, all of us have more than what we need in our closet. So every year when I go to India, I take a bag full of clothes, mine and my daughter's and I just give them to the people because we have so much. And still my closet is as full. It never seems to get empty. It's unfortunate because every year I get so many shirts and pants and ties. And literally, I shoes even, people give me shoes. I don't even buy shoes. It's so strange, you know. So what happens? I'm not trying that I'm very boastful, but as you go on this path, slowly your desires go down, your needs go down.
And by the way, I think that answers my question enough that I can meditate on it.
Yes. As you spiritually evolve, the desire automatically goes down. Like the teacher says in this book, that this girl who walks around, my doll, my doll, my doll, and she sleeps with it, and if anybody tries to take it away, she cries. But how long does that last? Till she gets her first car, and then she starts driving and gets her first boyfriend. Then what happens? The doll gets left behind. Why? Because now she has found a car. Now the car has become... So similarly, when you find something higher, the lower automatically drops. You don't have to pull the doll from her. Like in the past, if you pull, she would cry. Now it drops off by itself. So similarly, all such desires, when they are overwhelmingly taking care of you, once you have found something better, found God or found spirituality or found, as you evolve in your meditation, as you evolve in your spiritual growth, the lower desires automatically become less. They automatically fall off. So the idea is not to forcibly separate. Oh, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to have it. The more you do that, the more it pulls you. Oh, I must. I can't. I won't. But if you say it's not as important, why? Because I have found a better path. Once you find a higher goal in life, the lower one automatically. It's like a mother, you know, she loves her child, and suppose there is not enough food, she will feed her child and go starve herself. Why? Because her love for the child. So the physical needs are overwhelmed by the emotional needs. My child's welfare is better than mine. But the intellectual, suppose I am fighting for the freedom of the country, and we have found in people who are freedom fighters, they give up their family, they give up their physical comforts, they live in the forest, in the mountains. Why? Because they are ready to give up their emotional needs and their physical comforts for the intellectual goal. So as your goal becomes higher, the lower needs are easier to drop. So that's what they say. Make your goal higher, then the lower will drop off instead of forcibly trying to. If you tell somebody forcibly, you can't have your family, you can't have your body comforts, he won't. But once he is inspired with that higher goal, then the lower one falls. And the one who is inspired with the spiritual goal, then all the other three become less important. Physical comforts, emotional needs, even intellectual needs become less important because that becomes your overwhelming goal. So the higher the goal, the lower values, the lower desires fall off. So I think that probably answers your question, John, maybe. That's what I was coming to. You have to divinize your desires. You desire God. I want Him and Him alone. Then nothing else is important. That and anything that takes me away from my spiritual goal is an obstacle. Once you decide that's what I want, nothing else matters, then automatically your other desires become less. Your desire for objects, for people, for lower happiness. You know, thank you for all the comments and questions. We can close the door and just turn off the lights, the left two switches, the lower ones. Yeah. I think what I would like you to meditate, just pay attention, look around you. There are objects, right? Now, why am I able to see the chair? Because there is light, correct? Mm-hmm. Suppose there was no light, would I be able to see the chair? No. And our attention is always on objects. We don't pay attention to the light, right? It is the light of consciousness, the light outside, which is illumining the chair. That's why I'm able to. So for the next few days, as you are going around about your activities, instead of paying attention to the car that is driving in front of you, pay attention to the sunlight. So shift your attention from objects to light. At home, when you turn on the light, immediately the objects become visible. So instead of seeing my toothbrush, when I turned on the bathroom light, pay attention to the light in which I was able to see my toothbrush in my bathroom. So similarly, my thoughts are visible to me because of the light of consciousness. I'm aware of my thoughts. Why? Because consciousness is within me. So when thoughts arise in meditation, instead of trying to forcibly quiet them, say, oh, I must not think. I must not think of my husband. I must not think of my work. Just pay attention to what is making me aware of thoughts, consciousness. So I am consciousness. Consciousness is not God, is not somebody else. I am consciousness. So I, in my presence, the thoughts are available to me. Like if I'm in deep sleep, then no thoughts will come. So when I'm awake, it is the thoughts that are arising. So instead of paying attention to the thoughts and fighting with the thoughts, shift your attention to consciousness. So we'll do that as an exercise today in our meditation. And then throughout the week, try to pay attention to light rather than to objects. So focus on light. And it's the light that is making the chair visible. It is the consciousness that's making the thoughts available. Eyes closed. Relax the body from head to toe. Back is erect but not stiff. Pay attention to each part of the body and relax. Take slow, deep breaths. Body is relaxed. Full attention on the breath. Body is completely relaxed. And I'm watching the breath. Slow, deep breaths. from your attention to the breath, shift it to consciousness. I am conscious. I am consciousness. That's why my breath is moving. That's why my lungs are breathing. When thoughts arise, do not try to still the mind forcibly. Pay attention to the consciousness that is illumining the thoughts. From the thoughts, shift your attention to I am. I am that consciousness. Do that not only in meditation but throughout the day. I am that consciousness. I am conscious of the body. I am conscious of the breath. I am conscious of the thoughts. Let us spend a few minutes with that exercise. Thank you. Yeah, we are starting the first chapter actually. I'm doing the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. Not starting yet. I think I'll take two classes to do the introduction to the Gita. That's the class we do on Sunday at 11. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do the...
Are you starting that this Sunday?
This Sunday.
Because I'm having trouble getting started on the Gita.
Yeah.
Because I can't find the beginning.
Yeah, so this will be the beginning.
Okay.
This Sunday. I'll do take two classes to introduce it. And then, you know, the beginning verses, the eight verses we chant, nine verses, they are a homage to Mother Gita. We worship Gita as the mother who gives us the knowledge. So I'll give the meaning of those verses and then actually start the first chapter. So probably the rest until May will be just doing introduction and those verses, introductory verses. And then in August, we'll actually start the first chapter. Because we are close from May to August, middle of May to middle of August. But until the middle of May, we'll do the introduction. It's very good, the introduction, and those few introductory verses are very good.
Will the Thursday class continue?
Yes, Thursday class will continue throughout the year. Yeah, we never cancel except Christmas and Thanksgiving. Those are the only two times we cancel. Otherwise, if I'm not here, somebody else will do it. So yeah, but the Sunday class will end in May, mid-May, and then start in August. But the Thursday is the year round. Yeah, we never cancel that.
Disappointing that there's not more people here, because I know there are a lot of people who would benefit from this teaching, and they're missing out.
Yeah, it benefits me. In fact, I take Thursday afternoon off. I don't work Thursday, so I come here around 2 o'clock, 2:30. And I come here and then I meditate and then I take a short nap and then I read and prepare and make my tea. So my whole afternoon I spend in the mission from 2 to 8. It's so beautiful. It's beautiful. Because I'm trying to cut down my work, so I'm not doing Thursdays now. Only working till 1:30, and then I come here by 2. So it's really nice. It's very peaceful. This, you know, the whole atmosphere is so nice here.
Less desires.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to church with Tom.
I know.
I just assumed it would go well with Easter.
But every Sunday or no?
No, just this Sunday.
Oh, then after that you'll come. Yeah, it's okay. You can always listen online. I know it's not easy, but just download it to your phone, and while you're driving, just play it. The introduction is very good. It's actually from Prabhuji.
Oh, really?
It's his. This next year, Gita, I'm going to do Swami Chinmayananda and Prabhuji's commentary.
Oh, that's good.
Combine the two.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So the first year I did more Swami Chinmayananda and Eknath Ishwaran. And Swami Ishwaranandaji. But now I'm going to shift. Do Prabhuji and Swami Chinmayananda. So it will be a slightly different.
How many years did it take you to do it?
About 10 years.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So
it's okay.
74, but that's okay.
I'll be 78. Yeah, right. 79 almost, if I'm still alive. Yeah, no, I plan to be around for a while.
Well, your dad's still...
Yeah, my dad is 90.
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, 92. My mother is 90.
We're learning. That's amazing. And they're not even in good health.
They're in good health, yeah.
Oh, they're in good health now?
Well, my father walks around with a walker. My mother is a little confused. She asked the same question again. But they're still living independently by themselves. They have, of course, the maid and all that.
Well, that helps.
Oh, yeah. That's so nice.
Yeah, in India you can afford that, have a full-time maid and have a chauffeur and all that.
Gives people jobs.
Right. Actually, three people work for them. So.
That
I have to show you something.
Sure.
I'm gonna show him. I don't think of this as bragging. It's just so coincidental.
It's not bragging.
No, it's not.
The title of my album is Focus on the Light.
Oh, that's so nice.
Which you said tonight.
It's right. So beautiful. That's very nice.
Have you seen, did I give you a copy?
No. Can I have it?
Yes.
Thank you. I would love to listen to it. I will.
It's a compilation of all different styles of
beautiful.
Music.
Beautiful. No. It's so nice. I always admire her singing. I'm so blessed I could get it. Thank you.
You're so welcome. The last song has a little story I'll tell you quickly. The album was finished, but then I found out that I had a brain tumor.
Oh.
And I had a benign brain tumor successfully removed.
Oh, good.
But as I was going into the operating room, I looked up at this huge light over my head. And the next thing I remembered was I was waking up and I remembered this dream. I was on the back of an elephant. It was silver white.
Uh-huh.
And I was naked and I was lying on the back of the elephant. And the elephant turned its head and looked at me and said, "Don't worry, everything is going to be all right. Just focus on the light. Just focus on the light." So that's why I wrote that song, and that's why I titled the album Focus
very
on
nice.
The Light.
Very nice. Beautiful.
I love that.
That's so very nice.
And,
that's beautiful.
And the other odd thing is, I thought about this. This is me, that someone did a painting of me back in the 1970s.
Very nice. Beautiful.
But I always thought, wow, that's kind of odd. Krishna was blue.
He was blue.
Right, and the light, the light shining. And he always wore yellow.
Oh, he did?
Krishna wears yellow.
Oh,
see, he wears
a
yellow.
Major connection, but I'm
my gosh.
That's
maybe
very nice.
I have always loved.
Maybe she was a gopi, right?
Gopi.
What is that?
Gopis are the maidens in Gokul. Gokul is, that's why we called it Gokul, because Krishna grew up there. Uh-huh. And the maidens of the whole village, they all loved him. They all loved Krishna.
Okay.
And when because he was a little boy. He was 11 by the time he left, but they worshipped him totally. They were the maidens of that town. Mm-hmm. And they are all divine souls who came to be with Krishna. And they loved him more than their own life.
The way to go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, well, a good place to listen is in your car.
No, I will. I'll definitely listen. Thank you.
Enjoy. I hope you enjoy. Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
I just wanted to apologize for...
Oh, don't worry about it.
Don't bring it.
Yeah, usually you should just turn it off. That's usual. But let me tell you a little bit more about your. I think the first step in the battle is becoming aware.
Okay.
That I have this problem. That's the first thing, that I have this problem. Second is, I want to do something about it.
Okay.
And then the third are the steps. How do I do it? So the moment you become aware and you shine that light of awareness that this is problem, it's bringing me down, it's taking over my mind,
mm-hmm.
and it's delaying my spiritual pursuit.
Okay.
See, because my goal is self-realization.
Yeah.
And so anything that is delaying, mm-hmm. I should, and it's not that easy. You know, it's one of the most difficult addictions to give up.
The
most, I agree. Yeah. But being aware and then changing your focus, what is my goal, and it is taking me away. And if you still a month or two or three are not able to, I have another suggestion I can give you. Okay. I can give you the name of a person whom you can go see.
Okay. Well, I call it my carnality.
Yes.
You know, and... it was taught to me by my father, who was not a nice man, and started very early, and was kind of perverted.
Right.
You know? And he said the purpose of life is to have sex with as many women as you can.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
And so that's what I did. Well, my carnality has not served me well. I mean, this led to a lot of pain.
Right.
And not much else.
Yourself and to others.
Yes. Yeah. And
how old are you now?
70.
So it will slowly drop off too. I'm sure your ability to perform will get less.
I'm sure it will too. It doesn't stop me from you know.
Right, you get Viagra and things like that.
I mean, right. What I mean is, like, I'm every woman I see is a woman.
Right.
You know, whereas in truth, in the right spirit, those are my sisters.
Yeah, or you can say the mother goddess, because goddess is in every one of them.
Okay.
So
okay.
Every one of them is an incarnation of the mother goddess, okay. Of Mary, or if you're for a Christian, or a mother goddess.
That helps me a lot.
Right.
It's not, in other words, you know, it's how I have been viewing people.
Yes, yes. And it's very common.
In a different spirit, I would view them as mother gods, you know what I mean? And they would, then I might be able to deal with things better.
Right. But it I think once you make your goal, mm-hmm. my focus is God and spiritual, yeah. and realization.
Yeah.
It's not only God, but becoming one with God.
Yeah.
And that can only happen when you drop the lower. And the lower will drop off by itself. The more you spend time in meditation, mm-hmm. reading, doing service, working for others unselfishly, praying, just sit and pray, and develop love for God. The more you love Him, the more your attraction to the lower will drop. So you have to use all your abilities. With the body, you serve God.
Yeah.
The mind, you love Him. And with the intellect, you know Him. Aye, hamara ho gaya class ka. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Aaj maine pure 7:32-33 pe khatam kar di thi. नहीं ये वैसे ही थोड़े क्वेश्चन पूछ रहे थे
प्रश्न अच्छी थी
अरे ये एक्चुअली मैंने ऑफ कर देना था बिकॉज़ उसके थोड़े